is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiji Suhib in Washington, and here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
On Wednesday, a court in Harare sentenced three men to 12 months in prison for organizing an overnight music concert on New Year's Eve.
That's Columbus Mavunga reporting from Harare. Details coming up. Also, U.S. Treasury Secretary Stephen Mnuchin is in Sudan today. All these and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. There is concern in South Africa's medical community that the COVID-19 vaccines currently available may not fully be effective against the variant recently identified in the country. As Darren Taylor in Johannesburg reports, South African scientists already are studying the lineage of the new variant to fully determine the sort of risk it may present.
Scientists studying the variant of COVID-19 found in South Africa say so far they found no evidence that it causes more severe disease and higher death rates. However, says Professor Wolfgang Preiser, a virologist at Stellenbosch University, there's concern that the variant's more infectious.
The concerns as regards the South African strain and its transmissibility have yet to be fully substantiated, but of course, seeing our enormous resurgence over the past few weeks, which coincided with the rise of this new virus variant, makes one worry. And I can say that at this very moment, several research groups around the country are trying to find an answer, whether it is true that it is more easily transmitted, and if so, how much worse it is.
Pfizer shares the concern that the current vaccines won't work as well to combat the variant.
Those vaccines target the spike protein, which is the surface component of the virus. They basically mimic this and cause the body to form an immune response to that. Now, both variants, the UK one and ours, have changes in that spike protein. So, you know, it is right that one needs to worry whether these changes might influence the body's ability after vaccination to neutralize these viral variants.
Health authorities in the United Kingdom, which is currently battling its own COVID-19 variant, are of the opinion that the South African lineage is particularly dangerous. Pfizer says it's too early to say this. He says South African scientists first need to study people who've recovered from the variant and those who've received vaccines in local trials to establish if the vaccines cause their bodies to recognize and thus combat the variant.
These things are happening at a very rapid pace, so I'm confident that over a few weeks we'll hopefully know whether that is indeed a worry. Personally, there's no reason to panic. I don't think we need to throw up our arms in despair and say the vaccine is not going to help us. We are not talking of a vaccine totally not working, but it might be that it is somewhat less efficacious against the South African variant than against the others.
If this is indeed the case, say scientists, it may be necessary to adapt the vaccines. Pfizer says, although that's very expensive, with the latest medical advances sparked by COVID-19, it's easier to do than it sounds.
Now, what we are having here are really innovative ways of making vaccines where you insert a piece of viral genome into either a carrier virus, which is harmless, or just in the form of messenger RNA into some innovative capsule, which then gets injected.
He says it doesn't take long to do this.
To tweak this genetic information shouldn't be a major process. That said, it's not a question of days or weeks. It's clearly a question of months. And of course, these new tweaked vaccines would also have to undergo certain forms of clinical trials to make sure they work and they are fine.
Many in South Africa say that's time that the country doesn't have, and its health sector simply can't handle flood after flood of patients severely ill with a new type of COVID-19. The country has yet to obtain any of the vaccines currently available, and it could be weeks before it concludes negotiations with manufacturers for supplies. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
U.S. Treasury Secretary Stephen Mnuchin is in Sudan today for talks on future United Nations economic assistance to the country. Khartoum was recently removed from Washington's list of state sponsors of terrorism after it agreed to normalize relations with Israel. In return, the U.S. has earmarked millions of dollars in aid for Sudan. Mnuchin is scheduled to meet head of state General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan and Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok. The country is struggling with a hard currency shortage and high inflation. The talks are expected to focus on relief for Sudan's deteriorating economic situation and debt relief. Sudan's external debt is estimated at around $60 billion. Tunisian Prime Minister Hichem Mechechi yesterday fired his interior minister Taoufik Chaffadine, who is close to President Kais Saied, a move underscoring tensions between the country's two most powerful leaders. Mechechi is expected in coming weeks to reshuffle his cabinet amid demands from pro-government parties in parliament to include party figures in the government. Opposition parties and the presidency want to continue with the current technocratic cabinet. VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi discussed these developments with Mongi Dahoudi, a Tunisian-American political analyst.
Well, we have to kind of put things in perspective. So since the assignment of Mr. Mechechi to form a government, which was handpicked by Mr. Kais Saied, the president of Tunisia, he picked him after he was the Minister of Interior. So this is a ministry that's very sensitive, that the president, Kais Saied, believes that it's an important ministry that he needs to have a role in its affairs. So since that time, Mr. Mechechi kind of moved away from the president's directives, and there was a lot of friction between them. He formed a government that he called it an independent technocrat government that quickly morphed into and built a coalition around it from the different parliamentarian blocs. That's primarily Nahda and Qalb Tunis, the number one and number two blocs in the parliament. So since that time, there is this tension that existed between Kais Saied as president and between the Qasba where Mr. Mechechi runs his government. Now, the latest move by dismissing the interior minister is actually a reaction that was anticipated, especially after the visit that was made by Kais Saied only a few days ago. He visited the Ministry of Interior, and specifically he made a statement that raised a red flag for many in the country and specifically for Mr. Mechechi. The statement was saying that Kais Saied considers himself, by the constitution, that he's the commander-in-chief of all the armed forces. Everybody understands what that means, that he's in charge of all the military forces in the country. But Kais Saied went farther than that, and he said that he considers that the police force, the security forces in the country, since it is technically an armed force, that he considers that also it is under his directive. So for that reason, I believe that this dismissal of the interior minister by Mechechi and putting himself in charge directly of this ministry until further notice, that could come in the form of a reshuffle of the government. I'm not sure if this is going to lead into a collapse of the government. The government actually does not depend on Kais Saied, the president, for its survival. It actually depends on several blocs within the parliament, and all the blocs so far have maintained a strong support for Mechechi and his government.
There are demands from pro-government parties in parliament to include party figures in the government, while opposition parties and the presidency want a continued technocrat cabinet. What's your take on that?
The coalition that is supporting the Mechechi have asked him for a reshuffle, have asked him for change in several key ministries. These are political parties who ran on a platform to govern the country, to present different reforms in the economy and the social fabric of Tunisia. And so they are asking if we are going to continue to support this government and be responsible for its success or failures, we ought to have representation and ought to have ministers and people who are going to implement our visions. And so this is expected. I think we will see these changes within the coming weeks, especially that there is a notion of a national dialogue initiative that was started by the biggest union in the country, the UGTT, and that mostly the major players in the country voiced their principled support for this national dialogue, even though they have some differences in how to execute it.
While previous bouts of political discord in Tunisia focused on the split between secularists and Islamists, more recent tensions seem rooted in the division of powers between the president and the parliament. What could that lead to?
The most serious one is between the president of the republic, Kais Saied, the president, the head of the government, Mr. Mishishi, and the parliament, with all its differences, and its speaker, Rashid Ghannouchi. Now, we know that there is going to be a reshuffle in the government, that probably the president and others in the opposition are not going to be happy about. At the same time, we know that even people in the opposition, they have some very critical arguments against this government being ineffective, unqualified, and some of them view it as illegitimate. Probably the president of Tunisia thinks that because this is Mishishi. He was appointed by him to form this government, but Mishishi went ahead and now basically is loyal to a different political forces in the country. He sees that almost as a betrayal of his trust.
That was Mongi Dahoudi, a Tunisian-American political analyst. He was speaking with my colleague, Mohamed El-Shenawi. Bottlenecks at the Bet Bridge border post continue to hamper the flow of commercial cargo between Zimbabwe and South Africa. Arigando gives us more on the challenges facing cargo companies.
For several weeks now, the Bet Bridge border post in Musina has been experiencing queues as long as 15 km on both sides of Zimbabwe's border with South Africa. The congestion is worsening by the day and costing freight companies millions of rands in revenue. South African Home Affairs Minister Aaron Motsoaledi last week blamed the slow pace of clearance on the lack of an automated system on the Zimbabwean side, a point the Zimbabwe Revenue Authority ZIMRA rejected. Industry officials say before the onset of the COVID-19 lockdown regulations, 950 trucks passed through the Bay Bridge border post each day. The number surged to 1,100 a day last year after Botswana restricted transit across its borders, with 33,000 trucks crossing at Bet Bridge border posts a month. In addition to passenger vehicles, freight company officials say the post has become overwhelmed. Now requirements for COVID-19 tests and paperwork on both sides compound the problem. And at the start of the festive season last month, traffic at Bet Bridge surged. Officials from the freight and transport sector are concerned about the cost of the delays and have joined forces to seek ways to resolve the gridlock. The Federation of Regional Road Freight Associations, or FESATA, which represents 14 member associations within the Southern African Development Community, is working with the South African Association of Freight Forwarders. Mike Fitzmaurice is the FESATA Chief Executive Officer.
The cost calculated for both sides was around 609 million rand per week for time spent in the queues, and then an additional 88 million per week for time spent crossing the border itself on both sides, that's on the South African and the Zimbabwe sides. This amounted to a total of 2 billion rand lost industry through delays over the 21-day period from 3 December to 24 December. It is a staggering loss of money for the transport industry and cannot be recovered.
Lynn Botha is the chairperson of the South African Association of Freight Forwarders Border Committee. She says the gridlock is exacerbated by inadequate infrastructure at the border. Botha says the border post was designed 20 years ago and cannot handle the current commercial traffic volumes.
The fact that we have only single lane traffic, we've got single lane northbound and single lane southbound. So we're combining goods trucks with commercial items, and we're combining buses, small taxis and private vehicles all in the same queue. So it's not like we have the option to move the passengers out and send them to a different gate. There's only one entry gate for each of you. So if we have a lot of trucks, we're not able to use the second lane, which is for passengers. But as I said before, the infrastructure is definitely one of the main problems.
Botha says that another challenge is the lack of integration between the two countries' clearing systems.
We've got serious systems linkage challenges with neighboring countries. They don't speak the same language. Zimra uses Asikuda. South African Customs uses a service manager system that was developed locally. I think that one of the challenges is that they implement a lot of systems without any kind of public-private partnership discussions. There's a lot of organization that goes on in running a border post, and unfortunately, a lot of plans discussed don't filter down to the people who are supposed to be putting them together.
The governments of South Africa and Zimbabwe say they are working to ease the bottleneck. There are concerns, however, the COVID-19 pandemic will continue to cause problems for cross-border traffic as authorities seek to strike a balance between allowing business to run while trying to contain the public health crisis. Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondo in Bulawayo, Zimbabwe.
United Nations spokesperson Farah Haq yesterday said the security situation in the Central African Republic's capital, Bangui, remains relatively calm, but in the mining town of Bangassou, armed combatants were still present. He said UN peacekeepers continue to conduct patrols to ensure protection of civilians. Yesterday, the SCARS Electoral Commission declared that President Faustin Archange Touadéra won a second term in office in last month's election. The UN spokesperson referred to a joint declaration by the UN Department of Peace Operations, along with senior officials from the African Union, the Economic Commission of Central African States, and the European Union. The statement says the CARS Constitutional Court will be proclaiming the final election results and appealed to all political actors to respect the court's decision. Late Tuesday, the 10 defeated opposition candidates jointly called for the election results to be annulled and for a new vote to be held, saying there had been many irregularities in the election. Human rights groups in Zimbabwe say the government is selectively enforcing COVID-19 lockdown rules. On Wednesday, a court gave prison sentences to organizers of a New Year's Eve music event, while a friend of the president who held his own party was untouched by police. Columbus Mavunga reports for VOA from Harare.
When Zimbabwe's government first imposed a lockdown to stop COVID-19 last March, police used the lockdown as grounds for forcibly shutting down the meetings of opposition groups while letting events of the ruling ZANU-PF party go ahead with no interference. A new 12-hour curfew went into effect this week, and Musa Kika, executive director of the Zimbabwe Human Rights Forum, expressed concern that police are acting the same way.
So we have a security apparatus whose prime mode of control is force. Force that is meted out against the requirements of our constitution and laws and against the regional and international standards to which Zimbabwe is bound. So we have policing that tends to disregard human rights. And it is just incorrect to believe that enforcement of public health measures should disregard individual group rights. All these should work together, complementing each other in achieving protection of limb and life.
On Wednesday, a court in Harare sentenced 3 men to 12 months in prison for organizing an overnight music concert on New Year's Eve. Tafazwa Mhungwe, their lawyer, spoke to reporters after the ruling.
So we're obviously shocked at the level of punishment that was meted out by the court today, given that there's an option of a fine and community service. As it stands, my instructions are to go to the High Court and take it further. And we hope for the best in the High Court.
Since the arrest of the three, social media has been awash with accusations that authorities are enforcing the law selectively. Critics say police did not arrest a well-known close ally of President Emmerson Mnangagwa for holding a New Year's Eve party, which also went viral on social media. Zimbabwe's Vice President Kembo Mohadi defends the work the country's security forces are doing in enforcing the new lockdown announced over the weekend.
Our security agencies will continue to enforce stricter standard operation procedures to ensure the safety of all our citizens. We are our own saviors, and it is our behavioral change that will take us out of this danger. We have to be disciplined. when the situation is not, it doesn't allow, there shouldn't be any enjoyment, there shouldn't be any merrymaking at all. We need to remain home and keep ourselves safe and keep other people safe.
Zimbabwe has more than 17,000 confirmed cases of coronavirus and 418 deaths. Health experts say the numbers are likely to rise over the next 2 weeks because of big gatherings many people held during the holiday season. Columbus Mavungam for VOA News, Harare.
France said yesterday it had killed dozens of militants in an airstrike in central Mali on Sunday. However, several villagers and a local group said up to 20 wedding guests were killed by fire from a helicopter. Villagers in Bounty said the helicopter opened fire in broad daylight, sowing panic among a crowd gathered for a wedding. French military officials told the French news agency AFP its forces had been tracking the militants for several days, and they denied that any of its aircraft fired on a wedding. The village is the Mopti region, about 600 kilometers from the capital Bamako. The area is heavily infiltrated by Islamist militants. Journalists could not get to the area to confirm details. The UN Refugee Agency reports some 800 Ethiopians have arrived in eastern Sudan since the start of the new year. This brings the total number of refugees who have fled Ethiopia's conflict-ridden Tigray region to more than 56,000 since early November. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The number of daily arrivals is lower than at the start of the crisis, when fighting in Tigray was particularly intense and thousands were fleeing every day. Nevertheless, the UN Refugee Agency sees no let-up to the violence, abuse, and dangers confronted by civilians. UNHCR spokesman Andre Mahedjic says hundreds of Ethiopians continue to flee for their lives. He says refugees are arriving in eastern Sudan fatigued and weak after days of travel, with little more than the clothes on their back.
Latest arrivals tell of being caught in the conflict and being victims of various armed groups, facing perilous situations, including looting of their houses, forced recruitment of men and boys, sexual violence against women and girls.
Mehedjic says more than 30% of the refugees are younger than 18 and 5% are older than 60. He says two reception centers located near the border with Ethiopia are overcrowded and pose a security risk to the refugees. Consequently, he says the UNHCR partners and Sudan's Commission for Refugees are relocating the refugees as quickly as possible to a new site deeper inside Sudan. He says the government and humanitarian agencies are scaling up their assistance to the growing refugee population. More than 20 agencies on the ground, he says, are providing shelter, health, food, and nutrition services. He notes the needs are great and more funding is needed to carry out this humanitarian operation.
In particular, it is critical to further improve water and sanitation conditions in the refugee camps and reception areas, as well as ramp up COVID-19 preventive measures, including isolation facilities. Additional funding is also required to sustain shelter projects and improve the living conditions of refugees in the camps, especially in anticipation of the next rainy season, which is expected to start in May.
At the end of 2020, the UNHCR and partners appealed for $156 million to meet the emergency needs of Ethiopian refugees fleeing Tigray through the first half of 2021. So far, only $40 million has been pledged, far short of what is required. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Afaro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC.